So just to sort of summarize, you know, there are different stages, those steps I mentioned, but you do need to do a scoping, you know, like Professor Vishwas was saying, or I mean, you may want to take up a small river. You may want to look at your pocket, you know, how much money you have. You may want to look at your resources. So you need to really do a scoping first. Define the purpose and the outreach of your program. Then preparation for the assessment is like putting the team together. In Northeast, there are a number of experts who have worked on rivers across Northeast. So it's not going to be tough to find resources for this, you know, experts for this. So you can actually put up a team together from different disciplines and then kick off the process. Now initiate the environmental flows assessment, you know, constitute the team, the zone of the study area, which areas, you know, if it is a 10 kilometer stretch of the river, you may not be wanting to study the entire stretch, but you may want to select certain zones which are representative and then focus your energy there. You have to do a habitat integrity study. You want to do selection of sites where actual inflows will be conducted, because every site doing an inflows assessment is going to be tough. So you may want to sort of zero in on a particular site or sites to do the inflows assessment. Then the surveys and measurements, which includes biological surveys, hydrological analysis, geomorphology, which is the sediment transport and others, water quality analysis, and the social and livelihood surveys, which is again very, very, very important. Then another task is looking at the ecological and social importance as well as sensitivity of the particular area. Define the reference conditions. This is very important. You know, when you define your environmental objectives of a river, you will compare it to a particular site. So within the particular river, if you feel that, okay, there is particular stretch which is what we need the river to be in the future, then that becomes the reference condition. So you need to do some kind of a survey and some kind of an assessment of identify that.
Did you have that for Bikamba?
Yeah, we did have it. You know, it was from the Narora to Rishikesh stretch. Because we found that, you know, I'll come to that. I'll explain why. And look at the ecological status, current ecological status, and then define the environmental objectives. Once you do all this, you'll be flooded with information. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pieces of reports and numbers, but you've got to sit together as a group, because everyone will put their point of view, because they're experts from their own field, you know, maybe biologist or hydrologist, you know, they will bring their perspective. But as a group, when you sit together and say, okay, this is the requirement of the biologist, how does it translate as a benefit to the livelihood group? So we need to sort of discuss that, and that is the e-flow setting workshop, which we did a couple of times, and then finally took a decision on, you know, how and what the e-flows should be, the environmental flows should be. But that's just one part of the story. The last part, which we haven't done, is staging, and that's the most important part. Our report is on paper. Okay, and it has demonstrated a methodology for the first time in India, a holistic methodology which people can use. But who will implement it and who will do the monitoring? And that's something Dada also flagged, and we should discuss this in the afternoon probably, and that's going to be important. And how are we doing time? I just want to take you through the work that we have done in the Ganga, the Upper Ganga, which will, you'll see that, you know, a lot of the things that I talked about are systematically followed here, with some description on how the e-flows values were arrived at. Now, for us, the objective was to promote sustainable use of water resources in the Ganga to ensure ecological integrity, provide livelihoods, and maintain the sacred values. We used the indicators like fish, dolphin, invertebrates, algae. Religious rites were also used as an indicator, because a lot of people go to the Ganga for that, livelihoods, and the geomorphological processes. So we looked at the habitats, the activities, and the processes required to sort of maintain those indicators. based on which, as I said, the hydraulics values, that's the depth, width, velocity and the substrate were identified and translated into a number, which is the flows. It's very simple to show it like this, but it takes a long time and patience. So in our case, we divided the entire 800 kilometers, and after a lot of mapping exercises, we divided the entire stretch of the river into four zones, zone 1 to 4, Gangotri to Rishikesh, Garmukteshwar to Narora, that's a reference zone, and the middle range, Narora to Farukabad and Kanauj to Kanpur. If you look at the different zones, you can see in Narora to Farukabad, the flow is very lean, and Kanauj to Kanpur is polluted. The reference zone is rich in biodiversity in terms of the fish, the dolphins, and Gangotri, the pressure from hydropower dam. So it actually, you know, the 800 kilometer stretch where we were working had all the problems of the Ganga. And that's why we divided that into four zones, and Rishikesh to Narora was the reference zone. Now the components, hydrology, you know, I explained this, so, but I'll just recollect that. Hydrology was to look at the natural and present day flows, and there was a serious limitation because of lack of available data. We approached different ministries, and in fact, when we did this eFlows workshop in February, the Joint Secretary of the Ministry of Water Resources said that, okay, whatever data you need, you know, just ask us. But on the other hand, you know, the IIT consortia is trying to put a Ganga Basin Management Plan, and they tried for at least a year, and about 3 months back they got the data, 8,000 pages of handwritten data, flow data of the Ganga. And now poor guys are trying to sort of digitize it, and I don't know what all they are trying to do, 8,000 pages of handwritten data. So, and also we don't know what quality that data is. So data is going to be a difficult issue. Fluvial geomorphology is important because, as people were pointing out, you know, rivers are not, you know, it's not just the water flow. It carries sediment. So if you put a dam, you know, the entire sediment transport is going to be affected. So how do you ensure that eFlows also take care of your sediment transport? And Ganga is fertile because of its sediments. So if you are putting up dams upstream, you cannot just fix a 15% flow value, as in eFlows value. It has to also ensure that the sediments are transported downstream. The habitat preferences of aquatic species, we did several studies on that. Economic and livelihood objectives were also studied. Water quality and pollution were also studied. Now, the stakeholder consultation is at the heart of the eFlows assessment in a BBM, which people often miss that. You know, BBM is not just putting the blocks of, you know, geomorphology or hydrology or hydraulics or biodiversity. You know, increasingly we are seeing that all the reports on community impact assessments do have references to all these different disciplines, but they are not necessarily interacting with each other. So as a standalone block, it makes no sense. So people at the center, the social and livelihood aspects should also form an important part of the process. So you will see that identification of various aspects to the, you know, this is what we have done. We did the reconnaissance surveys, the baseline surveys, then interactive session on deliberate to find out, you know, how much are the recommended flows, then come up with a set of values for the river. Now this is a typical cross section of a river, and this we had to do ourselves with the help of IIT Delhi and IIT Kanpur. So hydrology and hydraulics cross section. So in this, the water depths at that particular time was also monitored and marked. So this is important. So if you set out to do an eFlows assessment, so this will this has to be done. Now if it is a small rivulet, then it's easy for us. If you're talking about a 15 meter wide river or a 20 meter wide river and not very deep, then we can actually do it ourselves. The other important thing is flow motivations. You know, as I said, you know, every team, you know, we had about 7 teams looking at different aspects of the flows, and each team has had to come up with a flow motivation form. And this is a flow motivation form for Cordiola. So as you see, there were interest in the Parian communities and the pilgrims and others. So this is a flow motivation form for the geomorphology, by the geomorphology group, for the site called Cordiola. Cordiola is a little upstream of Rishikesh. And where they said, you know, if you see the two, I don't know whether it's visible, reasons for recommending this flow. So each of the group was asked to explain why the flow was important. So in the geomorphology group, they explained that this flow was important from a lateral connectivity point of view. And consequences of not providing the flow was that if this is not provided, then the biodiversity will be affected. And so some studies that we know, some of the initial geomorphology mapping that was done, which looked at the rifles and the channel bars and terraces and all those things. Before I get into the critical flows, what we did was to also look at what is called as a maintenance flow. Maintenance flows are those flows which are for the normal years, where all the functions of the river is normal. It's a normal year, and the flow that will ensure that every service of the delivered by the river is untouched. For instance, fish breeding, floodplain wetlands, full sediment transport, etc., are fine if maintenance flows are maintained. So in our case, what we also assumed is that maintenance flows would be equal for about 70 years out of 100. So it's a 70% dependable. And for a long-term flows, the water volume will be at maintenance flow for 70% of the time. So first we said 70% of the time the maintenance flows would be equaled or exceeded. Okay, 70%, 70 years out of 100 years the maintenance flows are going to be exceeded, and 70% of that maintenance flow is considered as inflows. Is that clear, please? Okay. You got what maintenance flows are? It's a maintenance flows of normal years. Okay, all functions are intact. Now, maintenance flows would be equal or exceeded during 70 years out of 100. Is that also clear?
Yes.
Yeah. And long-term e-flows, 70% of the time, it will be higher than maintenance flows. Right? 70% of the time, e-flows will be higher than the maintenance flows. Now the critical flows, don't get confused with the terminology. Now I'm just driving a point here that all the groups who came up with their flow motivation sat together. For instance, here in this table you will see biodiversity and fluvial geomorphology. The requirement of fluvial geomorphology on the third column was higher. That is, the fluvial geomorphology group said that for a January maintenance flow, we need about 400 cumens. You need not worry about the numbers, okay, and the term numbers. But all that I'm saying is, these two groups discussed and said, you know, and decided on a value of flow which will facilitate both the processes, fluvial geomorphology and biodiversity, and which will also help all the other functions of the river. So in this particular case, 400 was selected as the critical flow. I know it's getting complicated. I want to keep it simple. Okay. So the long and short of it is that at different sites, different disciplines influence the flow values. At the upstream, geomorphology determines the flow value. Whereas in the downstream, you know, at Kachla Ghat, which is almost near to Bithu, the flow was influenced by cultural and spiritual, because what the groups found was that, you know, a lot of spiritual and cultural activities are on a declining trend because of low flows. So people demanded more water. They said that we want water to be back in the back to normal state, which was about 20, 30 years back. So there are the cultural and spiritual aspects determine the pose. But what we found was, in almost half of the recommendations, biodiversity requirements got the priority. So biodiversity recommendations drove the flow values in almost half the cases. Annual e-flows requirements was then calculated for the driest and wettest months. Driest month was taken as January. Driest month was taken as January, and August was taken as the wettest month. And e-flows values, as I said, was calculated by the hydrologist based on the inputs from the different group. I will not get into this because it's very complicated. Okay, now I'll skip this out. So this is a reference zone, the first zone where we didn't get the the current flows from the Tehri Dam. So this is incomplete. So if you look at this, the Narora to Farukabad, the black line in the graph is the present day flows, and the blue, the light blue ones are the maintenance low flows. So if you look at it from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 till about June, you are saying that the present day flows are less than the maintenance low flows. That means the e-flows are not available there at all. And we found that, you know, on an annual basis, 45% of the mean annual runoff is required for maintenance years. For drought years, the value is different. That also we calculate. Now, if you look at it, so every year has an every month of the year has an e-flows requirement. So 45% MAR can be released in 1 month. So that makes no sense. You know, some of the limitations of our study was also that, you know, relationship between indicator fish and the flow. We had very limited understanding of that. You know, like Professor Vishwas was saying, you know, the relationship between the BOD and the DO and temperature and the fish. You know, he said that, you know, the knowledge is still very unclear. Similarly, you know, we also found that, you know, we didn't understand the relationship between the indicator fish and the flows. Nor was a clear understanding of the flow and the water quality variations. And some of the cross-sections that we took, you know, we could have actually calibrated it much better so that the results would have been better. Now, just to summarize, you know, E-flows is not a one-time flow, it's a regime of flow. Assess E-flows using holistic approach is important, but we are increasingly scared after seeing some of those reports which misused BBM, building block methodology. So we need to be vigilant about, you know, what BBM is and what BBM is not. So so every one of you, if you come across some reports on using BBM, you know, please feel free to get in touch with any one of us. So we could help you in understanding whether it is actually BBM or not. Now, trade-off analysis is very important. Now, we, you know, for us, for civil society also, trade-off analysis in the sense, okay, if normally the argument is an economic argument, development argument. If you, you know, this area is rich in water resources, so we need to harness the water for economic development. But on the other hand, you know, we know very little as to what happens if we deprive the rivers of environmental food. We have not done that study. Probably a better understanding of that would be required. And we need to place all this in a basin management plan context. Implementation, I think we will discuss this in the afternoon. So who will monitor and you know, whether the required releases are made? You know, like Dr. Lada was saying, you know, if you leave it up to the hydropower developer to monitor it, then God only save us. And these are the guys who helped this, who had been part of this work. I'll not read out the name, and they're quite popular in this field. Professor J.O.K. of EVME and IITs and others. If you have any queries, I'm...
Sir, what has been the impact of the dam
impact of dams in Uttarakhand? I think the flow regimes are changing. The normal impacts one would expect, but the issue is, you know, still our people are hesitant to take action against those.
But why? What are we doing?
What are the reasons? The common reasons. It's an economic reason. Economic art. Okay. Professor G.D. Agarwal's past.
And he had been arguing for this.
So what is the action? Now, one of the boldest reports that we have seen is the WII report. I think it's a very good report, but we do have some observations on some of the sections, but still it's fairly a reasonable report, I must say, which has actually, I don't remember the numbers exactly. They said that around 29 odd dams which have been given permissions should be reappraised. 29, right? Yeah, so please look at that. You know, this report clearly says that there is a biodiversity threat, there is a threat to the hydrology, and there is a threat to the ecosystem. Okay, so the threats have been understood. I think even before this report, the government is aware that there are implications of this massive dam building exercise that's going to happen in Uttarakhand.
How many people are dislocated, or they, you know, like you change?
Dams in Uttarakhand. I don't have the numbers. Samir, you may have it.
Because
but I can provide you.
Initially, I saw, you know, there was a map and
Uttarakhand
was made in a red box.
Yeah.
Even
we can provide you that. Yeah, some of our friends know this and they're working on relocation issues and all.
You are talking about ethos as an integral part of AI process. Can you elaborate?
No, I'm not saying
AI is have to be an integral part of the ethos assessment, but I'm saying that the EIS should happen only after the EFLOS assessment has happened. You know, no dam should be permitted. You know, what is stopping us? You know, India has the largest water bureaucracy, and I mean, people like us don't understand why we can't do a carrying capacity study of all the rivers in this country. Let us have the facts together, and what are the environmental impacts of diversions of water, and then plan for the dams, and plan for abstractions. So that's, you know, we are giving it a spin. We are not saying that, okay, bring EFLOS assessment into an EIA assessment. We are saying that first understand what are the requirements of the river, okay, before you plan for anything.
Basically, you said ones that meet your ecological, social needs, and if still water remains, then divert. So basically, and later you said that it's the economic need or the development need that's taken into account all the time. But the point is that who decides what are the ecological, so-called ecological needs? Because that may be subjective to the people who are living in floodplains and people who are not, you know, people who are living far behind a floodplain. So who decides what are the ecological needs? And who communicate it to the people that these are the ecological needs? And how much these ecological needs are taken into account?
This is a very good question, I would say. And it's a tough one too. You're testing me, but that's a good one. Now, in India, who takes decisions on water? Not you, not me. Someone takes decisions. Okay, sitting at the top, someone do all the mapping and, you know, they decide, okay, something has to be done about it. Now, the fundamental problem is that the communities, including me and you, we are totally disconnected from the river. We don't care what's happening to it. You and I, when I say it's the larger community that I'm talking about, if we were bothered, you know, like our ancestors were in the past, we wouldn't have let this happen. Today what happens is, okay, someone, you know, this is a problem that we are facing also. People fight their small battles and they're not able to convince others who live far away. But you will still want that water from that river to be diverted and fed into your taps so that we can flush. We still want that water. We want fish from the river, but we don't care what happens to the river or the flood. And I think that's a fundamental problem, and many of us have been working in this area, and what is the tipping point. We need to sort of reach out to large number of people and get these people connected to the river. The economic argument, you know where it is coming from. Now, why am I, you know, again, it pains, because every time, why you want to pitch economics and ecology? Why can't it go together?
But the point is that it's saving the whole thing, because how much we see that we are encroaching the floodplains, or if I'm talking about floods in some specific cases, you come to Assam or something. Now, how much we take into account that we are the ones who are encroaching the thing? But that's because it is fertile. Just you said that the sediment is the thing that keep the floodplains fertile in Ganga. So how much is that? It's we who decided, right?
Why did you decide? No, why did you decide? What are the pressures that you had to decide on that?
No, the point is that what I'm saying is that it's we who live there. It's the humans. I'm saying that it's the humans who live there. So it's for necessary for us to decide that this is important for us. So
okay, now okay, I'll agree with the argument that okay, we didn't understand. Okay, people didn't know that okay, it's important logically. Okay, now. Do you think that the guys who rule this country, the guys who take decisions on water, don't have this information? They do know that. Now, what is stopping, you know, like the Silent Valley case, why can't an area, if it is critically important, be declared as a protected area? The floodplain is a protected area, and that's what we were arguing for. Floodplains need protection. I'm just giving you a case. And everywhere, you know, you can see that there are funding available from the Ministry of Urban Development and others, who provides funds to municipal corporations to convert these areas into concrete. Floodplain, what is it called? River zone development, riverfront development. Okay, now we know it. Okay, government knows that it's critically important. If needed, they can raise awareness. But if they're not doing it. But it's a collective responsibility. You know, I agree totally with you that, you know, the change should start from us, and if every one of us start working towards it, it can be achieved.
I think your question is also slightly different. You're asking to what extent ecologically floodplain, who decides?
Yeah, who decides?
So question asking.
No. First question is that that's what I agree with him what he said.
Yeah.
And the point is that I'm saying that who communicates, the idea of communicating, yeah, that this is important for the other varieties also. The ecological needs are also important. Who communicates the ecological?
I think his answer is a different way. It's actually now our responsibility to communicate the significance of floodplain. It is coming back to us now, because otherwise now, see, what is the limit of the floodplain, what is the limit of the river, to what extent the river can be. Now you would take most of the rivers, all our cities, everything is in the floodplain, what's that? Even Assam, Guwahati, if you look at it, some of it is written in the floodplain. But now that cannot be altered. But the remaining ecological spaces within these undercrossed floodplain is what we have to now define, that this is ecologically important. I think the other way around. Now whatever is left, I think the orders lies on us to show, declare it as ecologically important, no more development. If it is like, for example, the Ministry of Environment Forces now coming up with river conservation zone notification.
My doubt is, you have taken the stakeholders, especially, of course, human beings. So, they have given you a view, say this is what is important for us, and you went to another section in the whole stretch that you are studying. And are these all samples, purposive, stratified, random sampling? And how big is this sample?
Yeah, this, you know, our sample was about 550 or something like that, and it was stratified sampling. And the humanities department of IIT Kanpur did that sampling exercise and then executed with the help of People Science Institute in Dehradun. Decided by Dr. Abhijit.
Because there are always a doubt of standard error is always
there.
The smaller the sample, the more the complications include.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the bigger it is, there will be coming at another complication.
Yeah. So that was the sole purpose of it. But you know, as I said, you know, there are quite a few lessons for us going forward, and this is one of them. And so if we happen to do another study which we are planning to, and also demonstrate inflows in a particular river. So if we get into that, we will definitely keep this in mind. Yes. The methodology they have applied and the reports they have generated, what extent does your report influence the government or the policy makers, and what are the success stories as of now? There are no success stories as of now, but we are working closely with the consortia of IIT putting together the Ganga Environment Management Plan. So the first victory for us would be to sort of have inflows embedded in the Ganga Basin Management Plan. Now, some of the steps have already been initiated. We have done the assessment in four sites. Now, we are a part of the team who is doing the inflows assessment in 30 sites, 30 locations along the Ganga. Okay. So, we are closely involved with the IIT consortium on that. Second, I don't know, I mean, we do not take credit to this, but there is a lot of awareness in the ministry and the ministry of both ministries, water ministry and the environment ministry. And also some state water resource regulatory authorities who have expressed their interest to look at inflows. Okay. Now I don't know the origin of from where the BBM was made mandatory by the EAC. We don't know. But our role, you know, we are seeing it as influencing the implementation of BBM. If someone has come up with a shoddy report, we'll be actively out there with you guys to sort of say that this is something wrong. So we are planning to, as I said, you know, responding to Ravindra now, we are also planning to have training programs and interactive sessions with the ministries, because those are the guys who also need to understand, you know, what inflows are. So that's definitely in the plan. But success is still...